And you're on mute right now, Brian. Okay. And if I could ask everybody to mute themselves, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, thanks for everyone for just taking some time to connect there. And just as a way of beginning, welcome everybody, and welcome to all of you on Zoom. All of you on Zoom, can you hear me there? Yeah? Okay, great. Good. I want to begin by just sharing it. It feels so great to be able to be back in person, to be around like three-dimensional human beings. I love the two-dimensional aspects of you, but there's something about the three-dimensional aspects of you. And all of you who are on Zoom that are still two-dimensional to me, I still love you. So just to be really clear about that. So glad and so wonderful to be able to. Isn't it great to be able to see everyone? There, and thank you, I think mostly Jerry, for setting this up for us so that we can all be together in this hybrid fashion to come together to practice together. So just feeling really grateful. A little bit about the unfolding for this evening. What we'll be doing is we'll begin with a meditation. We'll sit for 30, 35 minutes, and then we'll have a break, 5 minutes or so, and then I want to share with you some reflections around this topic, the weight of the world, in terms of that. Okay, so let's begin to meditate. And what I'll do is I'll lead us all in. So I just invite you to come into a posture that feels supportive and comfortable. And then I invite you to begin to allow your attention to come inward. And to begin with something simple, like simply feeling the body in whatever posture it's in. Now I invite you to allow for a quality of relaxation in the body, just allowing the body to relax, to settle downward. And you might want to check in to specific places in your body that you know that you might hold just a little bit of tension. So that might be allowing the shoulders to drop, or the jaw to relax, maybe allowing the muscles in the face to relax. And then the hands to relax, and coming with the hands as well as just the stomach and the belly to settle. And now I invite you to allow the pelvic floor to settle downward and open. And now if you usually use an anchor in your meditation, like the feeling of the breathing, or maybe the whole body, to begin to open to that experience. For example, with the breath, really feeling sensations around breathing right now, the natural breath. Maybe a feeling of expanding and contracting that comes with the in and out breath. And I find it helpful to see if I can cultivate this quality of curiosity around the feeling of the breathing, for example, if that's your anchor. Because if you've never felt it before, there's a way of honoring it. As it said in a text associated with this, flavor of Theravada Buddhism, Tantric Theravada, this invitation to honor the majesty of the breath. And the same if your anchor is the whole body or sounds. Continuing in this way, opening, receiving the anchor. Remembering whenever the mind gets lost in thoughts, it's pulled away into another experience to pause, to notice that experience of thinking, there's a hearing, there's a worry, there's sleepiness. Just an experience that's arising and passing away. And then eventually returning to the feeling of the breathing.
Where is the mind right now? Just to notice, that simple noticing with the quality of okayness. And then that opening, that receiving, the feeling of the breathing or the feeling of the body. Now continuing in silence. So now let's take 5 minutes or so, maybe 5 to 7 minutes, just to move your body if you're on Zoom there. And if you're here in person, you might want to go outside so you can take off your mask and move around. And then we'll ring a bell and then come back together then. Okay, so see you in about, let's say 10 minutes past the hour. So let's begin again at 7:10, 10 minutes past the hour. Okay, all of you on Zoom, we'll be beginning here in just a minute once all the in-person people come back. So it's such a delight to see all of you, and thanks for attending distantly like this. Can you hear me okay, Steve? And Kelly and Tiska and the rest of you? Yeah. Okay, can you hear me okay out there? Can you? No, I can't, but somebody might be able to. We can try. I think the thing is it gives feedback if we turn it up a little bit. We could give it a try. Is it good? Okay, I'll try to keep my chin down to see if I can keep my voice in there, and maybe just give me a signal. And there's also some chairs over here next to the speaker. I just want to encourage you, if you are hard of hearing, please don't be shy in terms of coming over here so that you can hear a little bit better. As I was beginning to meditate in here with all of you, what arose, which I actually lingered with, is just how sweet it is to be back here in Albuquerque with all of you. I think many of you know I've been coming here for quite a while. I don't know how long that is. Maybe MJ or Fred, you know, I think it was that retreat a while. Yeah, something like that. 20 years. Yeah. And there's something about being back together, one, being here in Albuquerque, just to see all of you in person, also to have this hybrid. So it's expanded in this manner. And feeling just a lot of connection and gratitude to be able to be a part of this community for so many years and to see familiar faces as well as new faces as we continue here. And for me, it really does give a sense of community, which to me is so important in this path and practice, is practicing with each other. And do you notice the difference sometimes, just being able to meditate together and what that's like? So thanks for all of you who are here in person and also on Zoom. So sweet. Okay, let's see if this is gonna work. About a month ago or so, maybe you've had these nights, you find yourself wide awake in the middle of the night. So I'm not the only one. And here I was wide awake in the middle of the night. And the way I would describe what was going on inside of me was I was feeling the weight of the world. And there were different kind of themes or kind of centers of attention. You know, the one of the big ones was just the climate crisis and how it was kind of landing in my heart and in my body in the middle of the night. You know, and it's true, it would sometimes switch over to just the other dimensions of suffering in this world, whether it's the civil war in Ethiopia or all the starvation that's beginning to happen in Afghanistan, or the violent invasion of Ukraine. And feeling the whole mixture of emotions that come with that. And it's also the way the mind is, you know, I'd feel the weight of that and then it'd be like, oh damn it, I forgot to put out the trash, you know. But it's all that mixture of like weightedness. The trash wasn't so heavy, but could find its way in there for some reason. And I want to point out, I think there's something tricky here, because one of the aspects of this path and this practice is to actually
feel the weight of the world. I think this is what's come in part from my meditation practice, is being more sensitive to the weight of the world, whether it's globally these things going on, or maybe you can relate to that your partner or a child or a colleague that you know is suffering, and you feel the weight of that. And what makes it a part of the path, though, is to feel the weight of the world skillfully, to feel it in a way that's onward leading. Because I want to point out, merely feeling the weight of the world like I was that night, I would say is not an element of this path. It wasn't skillful, at least in the beginning part of the night, like that. It wasn't onward leading. Because you could say what was going on was I was deeply empathizing with these particular situations, all the beings that are suffering around the climate crisis. Yet there was something also there. I was overwhelmed. And me being overwhelmed is not helpful to myself or others. And this is important because I think I got confused about how to skillfully feel the weight of the world. I thought, oh, this is just the way it is. I grew up Catholic, so I always felt horrible. So I thought, oh, okay, this is the way it is. There's some good things in Catholicism. I'm going to be careful, but that's some of my conditioning. And it wasn't, though, onward leading for myself and others. So tonight, what I'd like to share with you are reflections on just distinguishing between what it is to feel the weight of the world skillfully and what it is to merely feel the weight of the world. Maybe you can experience this. If you felt I'm just merely feeling the weight of the world. I'm overwhelmed by, you know, the suffering of a friend or a partner or a child. Oh, wow, I'm feeling it, but I'm not overwhelmed. And then to take some time to share with you at least one way of gaining the skill of feeling the weight of the world with skill that's onward leading. As I mentioned on that night, I was merely feeling the weight of the world. I was merely empathizing. And for this talk, I'm using the word empathy to mean just simply the ability to feel the pain of another. I was connecting with the pain of others. And this is where it's the merely empathizing. My mind was engaging in empathizing in a way that was on the road to what's called empathic distress. There's a few different words used around this dynamic. And empathic distress is where that feeling of being overwhelmed eventually leads to withdrawal, feeling helpless, feeling apathy, which then can lead, when it's chronic, to poor health. And it becomes a barrier to acting skillfully in the world, rather than feeling in a way that's inspiring, that moves me and others forward. There's the barrier. It's the distress that comes from feeling the pain of others. So this is what I'm describing as merely feeling the weight of the world. And again, not here to cultivate this on the path. Yet it can get confused with feeling the weight of the world skillfully. And what is it to feel the weight of the world skillfully? Oh, we know, compassion. Genuine compassion. And compassion's different. When I feel compassion, I'm in contact with suffering. There is a dimension of empathy there. There has to be. And there's a quality of caring that's informed by wisdom and equanimity. So it's not about being overwhelmed. It's not about being blinded by the suffering. But having this capacity to feel and to care. And I feel like when it's genuine compassion, then as Allen Ginsberg says in one of his poems, The weight of the world is love. Then it becomes love when I feel the weight of the world. The weight of the world is love. It's the caring love of compassion. And I also want to point out one of the important pieces of compassion that's been helpful for me in terms of learning that skill is that it feels good. And I wasn't aware of this. I think I always had this sense of like, oh, feeling the pain of others with in the sense of compassion, it must feel bad. But what's important is to notice that it feels good to care. And that's what I want to land, because when I start to land that in my system, it reinforces, oh, I want more of this. And then that can start to blossom and land and take root. I need to find, where does it feel good to feel compassion? That's the skill. It's one of the skills that I want to point out. One of the things I hope you take away from this is just this curiosity of, when does feeling compassion feel good? So back to my story. That night, in the middle of the night, it's tossing and turning. And then that thought arose. And I'm sure many of you know this thought. It's the key to practice. It's when there's a turn in my heart where a question arises in my mind, something like, oh, how do I make this into my spiritual practice? How do I bring the Dharma to this? Isn't that the key? I feel like if I just remember that, it's like a done deal. To me, that's 90% of it. Getting there, I want to acknowledge, sometimes it's tough. But there it was. Luckily, it arose. How can I relate to what's going on right now in the middle of the night differently? Is another way of putting it. And then I switched to a compassion practice. It was the compassion practice of Tonglen, which many of you might be familiar with. So Tonglen is a compassion practice that comes from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, but I feel informs this Theravada path so well. And specifically, Tong is giving or offering, and Len is receiving or taking. It's from the Indian sage Atisha in his Lojong teachings, or these mind training teachings. And the way I was feeling it, which helps, is when I'm doing Tong Len, might be different for you. I feel like I'm an air purifier. I don't know where I got this. So I'm taking in, I'm breathing in the suffering of the world. And then I get to be the air purifier, and that feels good to be the air purifier. So all the air with the suffering in it comes in, into the body, through the heart. And then what comes out is breathing out a sense of well-being for others, a sense of kindness and protection and compassion and care. That's exactly what it is. Like this, the particular Lojong So slogan that Atisha uses is this simple practice. Train in the two, giving and taking alternately. Place the two astride your breath. So I'm taking in suffering of the world. And I'm breathing out this goodness. Breathing in, breathing out. And what was this so distinct for me, this is why I want to come back to this evening, that evening, is it felt completely different than it was just a few minutes before when I was overwhelmed. My heart was feeling full in an onward leading way. I was engaged with my distress rather than drowning in it. I wasn't merely lost or overwhelmed. It felt good to be the air purifier. And I think that's one thing that compassion can give me, is it gives me a place where I can go beyond simply feeling helpless, where I'm involved in something that lifts my heart in a way that feels so important, especially when I think about the weight of the world and all the suffering, both probably in our personal lives, maybe for some of you, and also in the world that we're living in. And I want to point out there are different ways of holding this practice of Tonglen. One is this notion of this is directly helping the world right now. I'm breathing in the suffering of the world and I'm breathing out this goodness. And it's making a difference in this moment. Or some people have the sense of, it really helps my system. I'm in this place where I feel more settled, more open in a caring way and not overwhelmed. And when my system feels that way and I'm not overwhelmed, I can help the world. Or you can also take up both. Our narratives don't have to fit with one another. You get to decide. And sometimes since then, what I'll do is when I can't sleep at night, I love to have this narrative of like, here I am, I really can't get back to sleep. And then I think of everyone else in the moment at night that can't sleep, probably for a similar reason that I can't. Like, cool, yeah, like, I'm doing this for you. All the other insomniacs tonight. This one's for you. And then it feels good. I'm breathing that in. And then offering all these other people who are awake this soothing quality. It's like I've been given a job. And sometimes that's what happens around suffering is one, there's a feeling of helplessness and there's a physiological, this is something that physiologically happens. And there's a kind of paralysis that can happen in the body, when I'm sure you've felt this, I know I have, when you're in the face of suffering and you feel like I can't do anything, my system can collapse and I feel helpless, and that is so paralyzing. And just to, even if you're someone who doesn't want to take it as completely true, it allows me to do a job, you could say. And then I can start to come into a different space that can have deeper elements to it than simply doing. And for me, and I don't know what it's like for you, it doesn't matter to me if the narrative I am using is scientifically factual and true. What matters is that it's, you could say, mythically and poetically true. This is important, I find, that I have a breadth in how I hold the practice, that it doesn't have to be scientifically aligned, is so helpful. Because then I can fully engage in a practice like this, that it makes it come alive. And having this malleability of our mind, I think is really important. I'm down for science, don't get me wrong. I don't want to throw that away. But it's great to have also this poetic or mythical senses of what it is to be alive and to do this practice. And I want to be clear, I want to name hopefully the obvious. When I'm talking about these mythical and poetic viewpoints that has a looseness around the factual world, that's completely different than the twisting and dismissing of facts for political gain or as an attempt to hide one's own unskillful actions. That's something completely different. It's important not to confuse the two. One is incredibly harmful. And the other can be onward leading for, I think, our world and our communities, our own hearts. And it's true, when I begin that way, what can start to happen when it's going well? Of course, I won't get to the process of this. Is when I was engaging in it, especially that evening, there can be start to be a fading away of me at the center of it all. Which is really relieving. It feels like I'm engaging in being compassionate. Compassion's just moving through me as a vessel. Like I'm just this air purifier and it's happening through me rather than something I'm doing. And I think that's really powerful for our practice too, around this quality of going beyond a kind of self-centric way of being in the world. I want to point out, because I feel like I'm just giving the simple notes to this, that this is a process, this practice, whatever the compassion practice is. And to remind you, which most of you know, that this path and practice often is talked about in terms of being a training, the gradual training, the gradual path is this set of practices that the Buddha comes back to again and again and again. I'm training the heart, or even with a teacher's Lojong slogans, those are mind trainings. And what that means is I need to do this repetitively for my heart to get it, for it to become natural. I think that's the vision for it to become natural. But it needs that. Because through that, there's a letting go of being overwhelmed and disconnected, and an opening to caring, like caring for the planet Earth, caring about what's going on in a place like Ethiopia or Afghanistan. And I also want to point out that it's a process, and this is helpful for me, that it's going to be messy. I wish I could tell you each time that I've woken up in the middle of the night and I practiced online, it's gone so just like this. I give you this talk, then you go back, and then it's done. Wouldn't that be great? And it might be. I don't want to. But it hasn't been for me. And I want to normalize that. That I need to have the patience to come back there and to be okay that sometimes it's going to have a momentum to it and sometimes not. And this also speaks to, I find it important to not only have a Tonglen practice, but other practices that I can engage in, maybe other compassion practices or other ways of dealing when my system's overwhelmed. And I want to point out that is being on a path, is that it's messy, it's difficult, there's ups and downs. And again, in the ups and downs, what I'm looking for is that it feels good. How can you allow compassion to feel good? Because it does, doesn't it? When you've cared for someone, have you noticed how it feels good? When you offer someone a meal. Just yesterday, I had to pick up our neighbor from the ER. It felt good to do that, to care, to support, to be there for each other. And it's a great letting go practice where caring comes before other things, if we can do that skillfully. Where I let go of, for example, my morning routine yesterday morning to care in this beautiful way. I also want to point out that for me, there's another dimension to feeling the weight of the world skillfully rather than merely feeling the weight of the world. That's a bit more than just a Tonglen practice. And that's that I do need to sense through and to also learn from the challenging emotions that get kicked up around the weight of the world. Whether it's the grief that comes with what's going on in the world, or the anger, the despair, the distress. And I need to be with them so that they can finally ripen into a skillful compassion. So that my skillful compassion, I find, it's important for them to be informed, that compassion to be informed by those emotions. For example, around the climate crisis, what I've noticed is that it's important, at least for my compassion, to be informed by the despair, the inevitable despair that my system has had to feel. And then to allow that to ripen. And again, this is different than merely empathizing, merely feeling the weight of the world. And I want to give a couple of examples of the merely empathizing, just to expand that aspect of what I'm sharing with you. And one example is, I was reading that they had done multiple studies around two groups of people who have been fighting each other now for decades and decades and decades. And they were doing studies on them around their around empathy. And what they realized is that people engaged in extreme violence in these kinds of situations do not necessarily lack empathy. What they discovered is there's a lot of empathy in both of those groups. A lot of empathy. The thing is they have a lot of empathy for the people in their group, and then almost no empathy for the people outside their group. That is merely feeling the weight of the world, merely empathizing. They're feeling the weight of the world, yet it's for a particular group of people. It then causes them to act in violence towards the other group. And I'm probably going to share the obvious here. Have you noticed this in politics on both sides? This is the main way often to garner votes, is to really get people to deeply and merely empathize. I want to point out the danger. We're riding this fine edge to feel the weight of the world's going to live. That's one extreme. I think there are subtle aspects also of this merely feeling the weight of the world, which to me can take on a kind of unskillful, subtle reactivity that sometimes we've learned growing up, kind of self that gets formed around caring and suffering. And the way that this can get formed is where there can be this habitual tendency to put the needs of others before one's own needs in a harmful way to oneself. Maybe you know this one, and it can look like compassion. Wow, that person's so compassionate. Oh, I'm being so compassionate. But actually what's underneath it is others' needs are more important than my needs in a way that ends up being oppressive. And I also want to name the gender dynamic, which happens here. This is what comes from patriarchy, is more people in terms of, especially people who identify as women or are seen that way or conditioned that way, often take that on in the ways how patriarchy courses through our society. And I want to point out that is neglecting the aspiration that the Dharma is about, which is to practice for others and oneself, which is important. This is what I love about Theravada Buddhism, is in the suttas, the Buddha is very clear. You're practicing for oneself and others. I think there's a skill in languaging that way because of this, what we could call a subtle reactivity, a kind of subtle, merely feeling the weight of the world rather than landing compassion. The other thing I want to tie this into is a phrase that the Buddha uses to describe a heart full of compassion. The Pali phrase, probably being the early spiritual language of Buddhism, chitto vibhuti. Chitto, some of you might know it, it's a derivation of chitta, which can be translated as heart or mind. And vibhuti is one of the many words that means freedom or release or liberation. And chitta vimutti in this context, at least many scholars people have disagreement about this, is a temporary taste of the heart being free or liberated. And I find this interesting. I find this really striking because it reminds me that this path and practice is not going towards a freedom of doing whatever I want to do, which often is the way we talk about freedom, especially in the United States in dominant culture. There's arguments about that. It's like, don't tread on my freedom. I need to be able to do what I want to do. And maybe on a more sincere level, there might be a place. I mean, I want to say there can be importance around that with certain dynamics. And this is different. It's not so much merely getting what I want, but rather a freedom to care. I finally have a freedom to feel the weight of the world, the feet of the weight of the world, which is love. So Ginsberg says, wow, that's freedom. And it feels good to care in this way. Wow, this is the freedom that the Buddha is talking about. Isn't that striking? This is the direction that the Buddha is pointing us towards. And of course, this flowers later on in Buddhism, like in Tibetan Buddhism, bodhicitta, this aspiration to practice for the benefit of all beings, because it's so intertwined with the liberation that this path is about. And I want to give one example of this, which to me exemplifies the freedom that can come from caring. It's one that I feel inspired by. So it's an incident that happened in 2017. It happened in Portland. It happened on the light rail in Portland. There was a white supremacist who got on the light rail in Portland and began threatening two teenage girls. One of the teenage girls, a Black teenage girl, and another teenage girl was in hijab, and really threatening them. So much so that three men who didn't know each other got up to defend these two teenage girls, and two of those men were killed in the ordeal. And one of them was 23-year-old Taisalin Mirden Namkai Machi. And it was striking. Here was Taylison on the ground bleeding. And another passenger, I think she might have been a medical professional, came over to him, to kneeling next to him, wanting to care for him and to see if she could stop the bleeding. And in that moment, he knew he was dying. And he said to her, "Tell everyone on this train I love them." And then he died. That was a life committed to loving people, caring for people. For me, that is a life filled with liberation, freedom. So may all of us discover and embody this taste of freedom, to realize the weight of the world is love, to discover this through caring love and compassion for all beings. Thank you. Thank you for your attention. I have no idea how to do a discussion in hybrid, so I just want to say that. Feeling moved, now I'm feeling a little confusion. But maybe if you're here in person, we could hang out a little bit outside. If you want to linger a little bit, that might be nice. Maybe in the courtyard would be sweet. And I'll say hello briefly to the people here on Zoom. Also, Jerry, if I'm correct, if people would take the chairs, and where should they be stacked?
So we need to set most of these chairs on the ground.
Great, thank you, and thanks.